Ladies and gentlemen, I cannot tell you what a privilege it is for me to call upon our next speaker, for the simple reason he's one who's going to rattle a cage. He's one who's built the supply chain organization for over 30 years from the bottom to the top. After having... And you talk honesty and credibility, you're going to get it. You may not like it, but you're going to get it. He's none other than Robert Tenorowitz, a veteran. Rob, would you come and join me? I need a twin anytime I do anything, so stay with me, please.
Right.
So Rob has been in the industry for about 37 years. I remember when he left Genentech and came to BioMarin, and I had the good fortune of requesting him to be a member of the advisory board, and was probably the third executive to join us. The remarkable thing about him, he retired as a senior vice president of supply chain and engineering, which was a kind of a remarkable combination. But the beautiful thing about him is, and you'll find out for yourself, he understands supply chain management, not only the principles, but the practices. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you Rob Tenorowitz.
Thank you, Devendra. Well, that's quite the warm welcome. So as Devendra said, it's been about 37 years I've been in the biotech industry and been in supply chain essentially that whole time. And really what I wanted to share today, as it says on the slide here, is just really observations, things that I've seen, experienced, and really learnings, and in the most of the time, learned it the hard way, and want to be able to share that with you, these learnings, so that maybe you don't have to learn them in such a hard way as I had to in a number of cases. Being retired, I will say what's nice about it, this is the very first time I'm speaking, not representing a company, I'm not looking for a job, so I can pretty much say whatever I want. It's kind of like having a superpower up here, so. But there is something, and you think, go to the next slide, or do I have a clicker? Oh, sorry. So there's these three things I want to go over. The first one, health and wellness, I'll get to in a second. Most of the time will be spent on supply chain risk management and engaging the operations workforce really in the context of supply chain risk management. This first one, health and wellness, is something that I'm very passionate about. I don't know if you saw on the first slide, but upon retirement, I opened a gym in an area that doesn't have one. And it's something that I wanted to do. It was really a giving back to the community. And I want to tell you a little bit about that. But one of the observations that I've had in my career is that we spend all this time and effort developing products, developing equipment to help the lives of many people. But I've also seen that people tend to neglect their own health and wellness. And I wanna, hey, good to see you. And I wanna just give that message out there that it's really important that we all take care of our own health and wellness. This is a quote that you can read. I'll give you just a minute to read it. Doesn't take that long. And the reason that I know this is true, the gym that I opened is in an area where there's quite an older population of people. We have about 300 members. I'd say at least half of those are over 60 years old. And one of the things I do, I offer for people is I put a program together for them, teach them how to use all the equipment. And I've done this for about 50 people. Every single one of those people comes to me and says, they've had their hips replaced, knee replacement, back surgery, strokes, you name it. They've had it. COPD, some people can't walk a quarter of a mile without having to rest halfway in between. And the reason that they came to the gym is because their physical therapist or their caregiver told them that they had to. It's like, you have to go to the gym and you have to do something about this to get yourself stronger so you can live an active life. Once you retire and get older, and even now. And there's many benefits of strength and conditioning, and they're listed here, and I'm sure you already know all those. And one of the things I often hear is, well, how do you find time? I would do it, but I just don't have the time. So here's another observation I have. In the years that I've worked, people go to way too many meetings. I go to meetings, there's five people from the same department. I'm like, you gotta be kidding me. It's like, really? It's like, it doesn't, and I don't know what it is. People are just compelled to accept every invitation that they get. I can tell you that, well, there's three options, right? When you get an invitation, you can accept it, offer another time, or decline. And I can tell you that the further I got into my career, the more I hit that decline button, because I knew I didn't have to go to that meeting. And I think you really need to look at that if you want to, and it's an efficiency thing as well. You know, looking at the room and seeing all the people in the room, there's 20 people in a meeting and five people talk. It's like, you don't need all those people in that meeting. By the time I retired, you could just see the D and the E on my decline button because it was just worn out so much. So anyway, I'd really just want to encourage everybody to do a little more exercise. If you're already doing it, great. It's going to pay dividends later on in life. So, all right, there's that spiel. On the supply chain side of things, when I was thinking about the risk management, I just listed, you can see the list here. It goes from defining the end-to-end supply chain, and some of it was already talked about earlier, which I'll mention. I want to reiterate. Defining it for the knowing your audience when you're communicating risks and mitigations, where can they come from? Hiring as a way to mitigate risk is a really important one that I want to talk a little bit about, and particularly with supply chain professionals. How you uncover these risks, you know, which ones do you mitigate? But ultimately, as a supply chain leader, the mindset you need to have is that you own the whole thing from beginning to end. And I do want to talk a little bit about the beginning of the supply chain. And it was discussed today. I think we know one end is delivering the product to the patient. The other end has something to do with raw materials. And like was mentioned before, where can things start to go wrong in the supply chain as it relates to raw materials? I don't know if there's another, sorry, how do you go back? And so the very beginning is that very first experiment that the process development scientist does when a product comes over from research. That's where your procurement person needs to be when they're selecting those raw materials. And that was mentioned earlier today. In addition to these process development scientists, they're very, they want to invent things, right? They want to innovate. So they create these wonderful custom made assemblies. Well, if you're stuck with a custom assembly, once you get to commercialization, you have one supplier, and if anything happens there, you're in trouble. So you need to encourage them to use off-the-shelf items, raw materials with good supply, and again, this is one I've learned the hard way. The earlier you get in the development on the procurement side, the better off you'll be at the end. Now, here's one about just making sure you understand your audience. So we used to have our inventory and communicate our inventory as months on hand. And we would go to our ES&OP meetings, and it was great because our CFO would go to every single one of these meetings. We would go and we'd say, we had at the time, I think maybe five or six commercial products. And we'd have anywhere between say 15 to 20 months on hand of our inventory. And we'd present that. And then we'd start talking about some risks. And we were in the Bay Area, so obvious risk is earthquake. And we'd talk about, well, what if an earthquake happens? What's the likelihood of an earthquake happening? And then we'd turn into this debate where it just never really went anywhere. And then we decided one time, we said, well, what if we express it in, well, how much downtime in the production plant can we actually afford given our inventory? And we came in and we presented that to the CFO and said, so we can withstand probably 3 to 4 months of downtime in the plant. And he's like, what are you talking about? You said you had 15 to 18 months of inventory. Well, we said, well, yeah, but as soon as you get back up and running, you wanna do some shakedown runs, you got the upstream production, downstream, you got testing, you got filling. When you add all that up, it eats up a number of months. And oh, by the way, we campaign our products. So which products is gonna go first? Which one's gonna go next? And it was just a, and we had been doing this for years before we kind of explained what that was all about. So he had a very different perspective on inventory because he also used to try to get us to reduce inventory, and it was mentioned earlier because that's just cash sitting in the warehouse. So just be very careful about when you're talking about risks, things like inventory, and know who your audience is. And that's what this potential risk with the SCRM software that's up here. I did a little bit of research on SCRM software. I didn't do a lot. I'm retired. I'm not going to spend time doing that. But you know, what it talked about was having a common language for expressing risks. And that sounds good, but you really need to make sure that people understand what that means when they hear it, and that everybody has their own understanding of what that risk is and what the impact is when you go forward. And then here's one from, risks can come from anywhere, as you might imagine, but here's some examples of things that I just wanted to list, a variety of things. So there was an analytical, or a QC test that we had. It was for a commercial product, lot release test, and it used an analytical column. Well, the supplier discontinued that column. And the QC analysts, the replacement one, they couldn't qualify it with that particular assay. And so what did they do? They kept using that one column. We had one column, analytical column, to release commercial products. A bit of a risk, I would say. But people don't, one thing you gotta be aware of, people aren't just gonna share that. You think it's obvious, and they would come to you and say, hey, we have this just this one column, but it's because of this. The worst phrase I've heard, it's just the worst phrase to hear when you're a leader in any capacity is, well, that's the way we've always done it. And so trying to, and I'm gonna come back to uncovering, how do you uncover these kinds of risks? Contract manufacturers. So I don't know if there's any in the room here, but they're inherently a risk to a company, right? So you have to, make sure, since you're not in complete control, you're giving up some of that to the contract manufacturer. And during COVID, a number of contract manufacturers got big contracts from the government and hired rapidly. But they unfortunately didn't train them all very well. And I think it's pretty well known, there's lots of mistakes made. Lot failures happened because of the lack of training of the staff. And that's why having a person in the plant, I think, is critical. And a lot of, I shouldn't say a lot, a number of contract manufacturers will try to negotiate that out or only for cause kinds of things. But that's one that, you know, if you have that person in the plant there, you have the eyes on the ground to be able to see when those things happen and try to catch those a bit early. And the next one is about specifications. So it was again discussed earlier, we want to rapidly develop our products, get them to the market as quickly as possible. Manufacture the fewest number of lots that'll get us there. Well, the problem with the fewest number of lots is you don't have a whole lot of experience. And if you happen to have a product that has a bioassay as one of the lot release tests, if you know anything about bioassays, the variability of that assay is very big. And if your patients only saw this amount of product, then the regulators are gonna give you the specifications here. And that could potentially be a huge risk because you know that during manufacturing, you're gonna get lots that are gonna be outside of that range. So I know it's a difficult thing to do, but you know, at least if you can't lobby for a broader set of batches being used in the clinic, you need to really clearly communicate the risk that you could have a number of lot failures, depending upon how the negotiations go with the regulators. And you know, nobody in the company that can make a decision about whether to get approval or not is gonna say, well, wait, let's not get approval yet, let's manufacture a bunch more lots. That's never gonna happen, right? You're always gonna get the product to the market as quickly as possible. So that's another one that could potentially happen. And that's what I was saying earlier, even though if you look at these examples, you might say, well, wait a minute, those aren't supply chain people that are responsible for those things. But I would say, yes, it is. It's, you know, if I'm a supply chain leader, I need to be responsible for the end to end, all the way through from the beginning of that first process development experiment, all the way through to the patient, through manufacturing, And I need to make sure that I'm looking at all the risks, because not everybody does that. And the more eyes that you have on that, the greater likelihood that you're going to uncover some of these risks. And like it says at the very bottom, this is a never-ending process. So there are, you know, enterprise risk management assessments, which should still be done. There's sort of one-off risk management assessments that get done, and that's fine. But in my mind, the supply chain risk management is a never-ending process. It's something that you should always be on the lookout for, if you will. Here's one of my favorite risk mitigating activities is hiring smart people. And you can see here, I love this quote, that you can just read it here, but we hire smart people so they tell us what to do. I'm no expert in procurement. I'm no expert in distribution. I'm no expert in a lot of things, but you know, hiring people that have that expertise is critical, and listening to them and then with them making a decision about what you want to do. Here's three positions that I think are very underestimated, not underestimated in this group, but I think in companies, because most companies are founded on the science. That's what gets all the press. That's what everybody's most interested in. That's what everybody thinks is the hardest thing to do. You know, this stuff that the supply chain stuff, it should just happen. And that's often the mindset of a lot of people in the C-suite. You know, unfortunately, you know, I'm gonna use a sports analogy, but you know, we are the offensive linemen of the company. We only get noticed when we do something wrong, right? And so it's really something that you need to lobby for and hire very well so that you can reduce risks in some of these areas. So we already talked a little bit about the procurement, making sure that you have continuity of supply, reducing the single source, custom, all those kinds of materials. And what's great about the procurement people is they tend to pay for themselves. Because they're going to make savings, whether they're real savings or even just being able to negotiate good contracts with suppliers. You need somebody that's experienced to do that. The logistics and distribution side, here's another one, and I just want to bring up the pandemic. So I know a lot of people blame COVID and the pandemic for supply chain issues, and I get it. I know that there was a big impact there, but from a logistics and distribution standpoint, shouldn't we have already known that something was going to happen? We had 9/11 happened. There's port strikes often. The volcano, right, that happened, that shut down the air traffic. So when you put together a logistics and distribution team, they should have that experience so that you put together things with backups. Because you know there's going to be another disruption in the supply chain. I don't know how, I don't know when, but it's gonna happen, and you should be prepared to have alternate paths and alternate ways of getting the product where it needs to go. This last one, this product supply chain owner, was admittedly a new one to me, and this is probably not something that you need at a startup, an early phase company, but once you get towards commercialization, having somebody that really is just completely responsible for that end-to-end supply chain. Doesn't take away my or our responsibility as supply chain leaders, but having that focused look across there and always checking in is really critical. And that's a really important, I think, role to have within the supply chain. And then how uncovering these unanticipated risks, what I did and what I felt was very effective was really developing a network of people. So I would meet often with a number of individuals. There's the three that I just mentioned, project team managers. They're gonna have insights into a variety of things with the product itself, all the directors of manufacturing, quality, both internal and external. And this is not about trying to step on anybody's toes or go around somebody's back at all. This is something that should be encouraged at the company to have that so that you know, everybody's understanding what everybody's done and what their issues are. And even the leaders in the formulation, process development, analytical development, understand what are they working on? What are the kinds of things that are coming next? Are they gonna cause any problems for us? And then the last one is really kind of embedding yourself within operations. And this is the one about the engaging the operations workforce, which I want to talk about next. And so this is one where all these things take time and effort. And that's one of the themes here, is that you as a supply chain leader need to take that time. Technology has its place. Maybe I'm a little biased, but you still need that human intervention and human thought and coming up with decisions about all these risks that we're talking about. But there's something that I did discover recently. So this is definitely my opinion, but thinking about the support that you get for whether it's a team, an initiative, some workforce, a leader I'll see them send a blast email out. I fully support this effort. You have all of them, you know, I'm right behind you the whole way, and then you never hear from them again. That's, to me, kind of a cop-out, because you're really not, you're telling them, you're not showing them that you support what they're doing. Then the next level is, I can like to call it the guest appearance. Like, well, I'm gonna go a step further. I'm gonna actually show my face. I'm gonna take them out to lunch. I'm gonna listen to what they have to say. And then maybe take some feedback and then give it to somebody else to deal with. So it's a little bit better. But this last one, I'm gonna say I came upon it because I was put as an executive sponsor of this very large operational excellence initiative at a company. And it's something that was not very well received, because we also had a large consulting firm helping us with that. And so in everybody's mind, it was, well, this is just trying to get rid of a bunch of people. So it's a headcount reduction project. That was not the intent. It was just about becoming more efficient. But what I decided to do was, I'm going to sit down. They have weekly meetings for this project team. And these are people, these are QC analysts, these are manufacturing techs, manufacturing managers. At that level in the organization, they're a bit apprehensive to have a vice president sitting in these meetings. But something interesting happened. So I just overheard somebody say, well, they, from an efficiency standpoint, they had to walk to another building and up the stairs to print out these QC test sheets. Like, why? It's like, well, the printer we have is broken. It's like, what? It's like, well, why can't you get it fixed? Well, we have to submit a ticket to IT. You know, it's going to take them forever to get back to us. It's just not worth it. We just walk over there. So within 24 hours after me hearing that, they had a working printer. They didn't have to do that anymore. And I called them up. I said, hey, is this all taken care of? They're like, yes. And then what I did when I noticed that, and how they started to open up about other things. And I just kind of kept doing that. And these weren't huge things, but it was really helping them, and they really appreciated that help, because they're, to be quite honest, they're very skeptical about, you know, those vice presidents. But they actually saw that they were being helped by somebody. And that's how we found out about the analytical column. You know, we could have been bitten, you know, but that's how it came up in one of those, because these people trusted that somebody would actually help them. And so I would say, you know, it takes time, but embedding yourself, whether it's in a project, become an executive sponsor for a project team. Maybe there is an initiative that you can do. You know, there are opportunities out there for you to get more involved as a senior leader and really show that you care what they're doing and you really do want to help them. You're not going to give it off to somebody else. So that was very beneficial. And then just deciding which things to mitigate. All these things require investment. And so it's really up to you as a supply chain leader. You're the only one that really understands that end-to-end. You're the ones that understand, you know, when something happens in one area, how it's gonna impact down the line on supply chain. You don't do it in a vacuum, right? You're gonna talk to others as well, but it's really important that you can communicate the risks that you recommend that get mitigated and the ones that you don't and what may happen. And that's where that last point of clearly communicating to the C-suite. And what I found is, if you talk to them about some lot failures, it's like, oh, okay, that may happen. Or some of the individual things that may happen when these risks, if they happen to occur. But if you start talking about stockout, lost sales, their ears perk up. It's like, wait a minute, you're talking about sale? I thought you were just talking about something over here. It's like, and you need to be able to talk to them in that way to get their attention and say, in this way, if this happens, here's what the impact is. We believe we need to invest in this to prevent this other thing from happening. And so it's really important that you talk their language, if you will, depending upon who your audience is. And you need to get their buy-in, because you don't want to, if something happens, you know, you're all in that together. So you got to be very clear. And this can happen at ES&OP meetings. I also would have a regular meeting with the CEO as well and communicate these things. So there are ways. You don't necessarily have to have a seat at the table, I don't think. But there are definitely ways to get the message to where it needs to go. This is just, I'm getting some time constraints here, but this is just a list of the things that I've already gone through, so I'm not going to spend any more time on this, but that kind of takes me to the end, and I just want to leave you with this. Go work out. All right. Thank you very much. Okay.